When Ry Barcott was 13 years old, his parents decided he should see more of the world, so they traveled from their rural town in Rhode Island to the Middle East and to Kenya. He says he'll never forget the sight of kids sifting through a mountain of junk in a traffic circle in Nairobi.
Many of them had small bottles in their mouths with industrial-strength glue that they were inhaling. And one little girl had a baby bound to her back, and she was walking up to these cars as they were swerving and blaring their horns and with her hands out. And I remember just wanting to help her, wanting to do something, give her some of the money from mowing lawns that I had made that summer. But before I could do that, it felt volatile and insecure, and so my mom and I turned around and we walked back to the hotel. And my mom said something I'll never forget. "There's a lot of pain in the world," she said, "and you should try and help when you can."
It was that advice, to help when you can, that eventually brought Ry to another place in Kenya, Kibera, one of the largest slums in the world. Hundreds of thousands of people are crammed into an area the size of Central Park in New York. In the year 2000, Ry Barcott was a Marine. He joined the Corps to pay for college. He went to Kibera as a student to study ethnic rivalry and how it might be prevented. Barcott figured the stay there would serve him well in the Marines. He learned Swahili, and he moved into a 10-by-10-foot tin shack in the Kibera slum.
It was completely overwhelming. The noise was everywhere. It was a cacophony. And you're separated from your neighbors by a thin piece of tin that's no thicker than, you know, your thumbnail.
And you thrust yourself into that life. I mean, you lived in the slum. You made friends with and associations with lots of people there. But specifically, Tabitha Festo and Salim Mohammed, two very different people. Briefly tell us how you became friends with and associates with both of them.
Well, Salim Mohammed was a young leader in a neighboring sports program called the Mathare Youth Sports Association. And I went there and to this other slum because what really impressed me about it was that it was a sports program using soccer to promote community development and youth leadership. But it was led by young people from the slum, not outsiders. And Salim was one of those young people, and he was about my age. And, you know, we didn't share a lot in common. Salim had grown up on the streets. He was Muslim. He was a pacifist. Physically, we looked very different. He was about 100 pounds soaking wet. But for whatever reason, we really connected when I showed up without an appointment and walked into his office. And I think one of the reasons we connected was because he pushed back. You know, at the end of my interview, he said, "You know, you're going to leave this office with research. But what are you going to give back? What's the community going to see in return?" And those words from Salim really stayed with me. And in some ways, they kind of haunted me for the next few months before I reached back out to him on email and said, "Okay, buddy, let's try and do something."
He so pushed your buttons.
Together. Yes, he did. He's very savvy. The other co-founder of our organization was another person who I met named Tabitha Festo, and she confronted me as well. And she said, "You know, you're asking all of these young people about their problems. Lakini mimi na kuwa na shida kubwa pia. I got big problems too." She was a widow with three kids. She had formerly been a nurse but lost her job when the government downsized its spending, and she had been jobless for 2 years. And towards the end of that conversation, she confronted me and said, "You know, you should give me 2,000 shillings, about $26. I made a habit of not giving out any money, so I asked her what she was planning on doing with it, and she told me that she wanted to start a vegetable selling business.
And these are like spinach greens that are stapled.
Exactly. Sukuma wiki is what it's called. Collard greens, basically.
But that wasn't her intent, ultimately.
Right. She didn't tell me this, but her real dream in life was to start a small medical clinic. And for whatever reason, I gave her the money. I didn't think I'd see her again. And I returned back the next summer. I was a second lieutenant in the Marines on leave for 3 months to start this non-governmental organization. The Marine Corps was remarkably supportive of this. And Tabitha found me and sort of silently grabbed my hand, and we went zigzagging through these alleyways, and she took me to her 10-by-10-foot shack, which she had converted into a medical clinic in the heart of Kibera that treats over 40,000 patients a year.
I want to get to the other part of your life, and that is your service in human intelligence in Iraq, because for many people, I think, the juxtaposition of the two is an odd one, of the service and sense of purpose that you brought to Kibera and then to the Marine Corps. You say Kibera happened on the way to war. What happened in war?
Well, after founding Carolina for Kibera, I went on and spent 5 years in the Marine Corps as a human intelligence officer and led small teams of Marines into Bosnia, the Horn of Africa, and Iraq. And I recognize that there's also a contrast here that really is striking and difficult for people to reconcile, and that idea that, you know, I was in some ways waging peace while fighting war. But the thing was, I really didn't see them as mutually exclusive. Many military men and women in particular have a fuller sense of the value and fragility of peace than others. I mean, in the Marine Corps, we talked about the three-block war, which was the idea that you could seamlessly shift from combat to peacekeeping operations to humanitarian aid delivery in the course of seconds, city blocks. And I thought that I'd be particularly well prepared for that and to lead Marines into that because of my experience in Kibera. But what I found was that it was just really difficult. I was too busy scouring the waistlines of young kids for concealed weapons to even imagine kicking a soccer ball with them. And so what I left with was a really profound sense of both the strengths as well as the very large limitations to the use of military force. It's very difficult to build trust when you're covered in body armor and carrying a weapon. And in the end, we're not very good at preventing violence, even though that is so much more cost-effective in terms of life and dollars. I mean, I think that's a really important point. There's an inextricable link between development and our global security.
Rye Barcott's memoir is called It Happened on the Way to War, A Marine's Path to Peace. The group he helped found, Carolina for Kibera, continues to help Kibera residents run a soccer league and more. You can see all sorts of stuff, including videos about Carolina for Kibera and its 10 years of work in Kenya at theworld.org.